Donald Katz is founder and CEO of Audible, the internet's mecca for audiobooks. Audible, founded in 1995, developed the first copyright secure system for distributing audio via the internet for playback at or away from a PC. From its website and via Audible's key distribution partners, Amazon.com and iTunes, Audible serves listeners like us who seek convenient access to the best of audio entertainment, information, and education. As you probably know, Audible is not only about books, but includes daily audio digests of leading newspapers like The Wall Street Journal and The New York Times, weekly audio digests of Forbes, Harvard Business Review, Scientific American, and others, as well as time-shifted public radio programs such as All Things Considered and Car Talk. Before founding Audible, Don was a successful author and journalist. One of his books, Home Fires, An Intimate Portrait of One Middle-Class Family in Postwar America, was nominated for a National Book Critics Circle Award. Don also has served as a contributing editor for Rolling Stone, Esquire, and Sports Illustrated, to list just a few. Don, who hails from Chicago, graduated from New York University, attended the University of Chicago, and holds a master's in economics from the London School of Economics. Welcome, Don. It's so fabulous to have you stopping by the Book Report today.
Great to be here, Elaine. Thanks for having me.
Can you share the story of the beginning of Audible?
Well, you know, there's when businesses that have grown large are in retrospect considered, I've always found there's multiple genesis stories. It's never one thing. But in my case, Audible.com was an idea that came to me during a process of writing what would have been my fourth book. I ended up publishing five during my 20 years as an author before veering from the writing life for what I thought would be 5 or 6 years to start a company, because I thought it couldn't take longer than my 6 and 5 year book production cycles. But I was just researching a book 20 years ago, 19 years ago, on the digital media revolution, which at that time was so unformed, it was just a lot of talking and there really wasn't much to write about. But I got expert enough in the characteristics of what digital distribution meant in terms of the physics and things like that. And to make a long story short, I suddenly came to me that these belly packs full of tapes that I used to jog with and to listen to audiobooks, which I always thought was a brilliant and underappreciated and completely mispositioned and poorly distributed product, that you could create a digital inventory. And this is, again, this is very primitive days. And that some of the things I knew from my many book tours to 12 and 14 cities and the like, to see the problems of book distribution, the problems of the book business, would go away. For instance, you'd never be out of stock. For instance, you'd never have to go out of print. And that you could have a vast selection rather than the 200 or 300 best case tapes or CDs in the back of a bookstore. And you could optimize the price to the consumer because you wouldn't have packages and returns from the seller back to the publisher and all that kind of stuff. So that sort of started the concept. My college roommate and I, he was a supercomputer designer, and I was nothing if not an English major, and I then said to him one day that, let's figure this out, because you're going to have to get the signal of the spoken word, which is very compressible versus, you know, music and video in those days. Everything was still going through the phone lines. We need to get it off the phone or off the computer once we get the signal to people so they can take it in their cars. And at that time, I did some research and found that 93 million Americans drove to work alone. And actually, now it's 105 million Americans drive to work alone, only 119 million drive to work. So I saw this huge opportunity to fill that time with literate listening and value, which was underappreciated because of how, you know, small of aspirations the audiobook business had been. So we figured out that you had to kind of liberate the audio from the desktop. And I remember saying, well, the printer sits on every desktop liberating text, because the early discourse of the new networks was it was textual. What are we going to do? And so we invented the first digital audio player and started a company in 95 dedicated to do that and to sort of reposition and transform this, you know, slightly backwater business called the audiobook business. And we came out with the digital audio player in 1997, which people really don't have good historical memory on, either economic history or technological history, I've realized after all these years. But in 1997, nobody knew what a download was. Nobody trusted their credit card online. And this thing came out 5 years before the iPod, and was out there in a, with people literally not understanding how it could possibly work, this little solid-state device. It's in the Smithsonian now as the first networked digital device. And it's we were, you know, very proud of what we did. And, you know, and a lot of other things were behind it. And part of it was that I was always a fairly literary writer. I was part of the Rolling Stone, very long form, you know, narrative nonfiction world, and was their London guy for years in the 70s. And I also wrote books that were, you know, considered fairly literary. And, you know, I was never anything but absolutely transfixed by the power of well-voiced prose. And part of the reason was that my mentor was Ralph Ellison, the great novelist, and studied with him, and he kind of was very, you know, proactive in my writing career. And Ralph absolutely believed, as did many people in the 20s and 30s, that American vernacular, our talking, our joking, our storytelling, our ability to sell things and lament in the fields was our talking led into the characteristic that became American literature. Fact is, when I left the writing life to start Audible and Audible.com, I was kind of attacked in the then kind of literary gossip press and the like for not only abandoning my writing, which was going really well, I have to say, I had no complaints, and but I also was abandoning text for this you know, secondary thing called an audiobook. So 17 years later, after, you know, figuratively putting my pen down, Audible.com's a great, big, very fast-growing, you know, phenomenon that's exceeded my dreams of how popular, and it's got a long way to go. It's really moving up towards a position in the mainstream. I mean, right. It's way out of its backwater. Most of our members have never bought an audiobook before. Have no bearing, no relationship to that nice-to-have product you bought for way too much money and then kept the kids quiet during a vacation. The average member takes 19 books per year. That's the average.
Huh.
Because they use it every single day, and they look at it as a service called Audible, and it completely fills their lives with new meaning and value.
I've been reading that Audible has an amazing new initiative called the Audible Author Services Program. Do you want to talk about that a bit?
We've started growing, and this happens all the time, so fast. You know, we keep outstripping the source of supply, as they say in business economics. You know, we grow so fast that traditional publishers, which were either the big print publishers who had relatively small audio divisions or licensing out to these great audio publishers, you know, like Books on Tape was one of the most famous ones originally, that they just couldn't keep up. So years ago, we kept trying to, you know, co-invest and basically went into becoming a producer. And now we're the largest producer of audiobooks and the most decorated producer of audiobooks. We just got 37 Audi nominations, a vastly, you know, record-breaking number. And we also have very famous actors in the studios all over the country doing this stuff just because we've got to have more content. So in this process, we also realized that when we connected directly with authors, they, because there's a new generation of authors who use social media and feel much more of a sense of helping themselves rather than ceding all their fortunes to publishers and agents who incidentally get most of the money. Younger authors in particular need to kind of get over that old thing of being Victorian aesthetes, you know, living above the marketplace and letting all these other people take care of them, because they don't really have as much wherewithal to do that anymore, or the money. And the fact is that, you know, a company like Audible, we've got the millions of customers. So we just thought, how do we wake authors up to this? And last year we started something called ACX, Audiobook Creation Exchange, which is an online rights marketplace and audio production mechanism, very sophisticated, where all these, you know, actors and engineers can meet with rights holders and basically create this stuff and you know, turn these kind of dead rights to audio, which often don't get made into audio, into books. But still, it was we weren't waking them up enough. So then we started something called Author Services, where we basically said any American, Canadian, or British author with a title at Audible can come and sign up, so we can know where to pay you and tell the tax man that we'd pay you $1 a download for every one of your books at Audible between now and the end of the year, and that we'll work with you to do social media campaigns and merchandising and things like that to escalate your sales.
All right, and lastly, can you talk a little bit about the evolution of the company? What's next?
Our problems and our challenges are very kind of, you know, they say high-class problems, because things are actually going so well. And really, the challenge is just the fact that with all of our growth and the size of the company, and you know, so it still is not a well-known concept that you can come to audible.com and literally, if you think you should read more, which most people do, you have a solution. And I think, you know, part of it's just being creative about getting awareness out there and letting people try it, because the service sells itself. The fact is that the performances in terms of their actual quality just keeps going up, and we've become a big part of that. So on one hand, the answer is we're spending as much money as we had in revenue, you know, in 2006 on marketing now. We're investing super heavily in content. Witness the fact that you can hear, you know, Kate Winslet and you know, Annette Bening and Colin Firth and Dustin Hoffman and Susan Sarandon and Anne Hathaway and Sam Jackson and others doing Audible audio now if you come to audible.com.
Well, I can tell you that listening to books has changed my life, and I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Great. Thanks very much.
All right. Bye.
Take care.